You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Used to be, if you wanted to talk to your computer, first you had to speak to it for hours at a time, pausing between each word to train this box to understand you. And then what? Well, use it to write your novel by speaking instead of typing. In those days, speech recognition required, you know, maybe it might flub one word in 10. It was almost faster to type it if you wanted to get it really accurate. Those days, we're talking about the long time ago of maybe 10 years. But now speech recognition is really starting to come into its own. You can talk to your car's GPS. You can get automatic captions to YouTube videos. Or maybe you've tried doing a Google voice search on your smartphone. I've tried this many times, and I am constantly amazed about what this understands, even foreign language words, with all that, without all that painstaking one-on-one training. So how does it work? How do these algorithms actually figure out that you said frying pan instead of flying lamb? And are there any similarities between how computers are learning to understand speech and how we humans do it? Are computers processing words and sentences just like our brains do? Maybe they've copied how that. Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And you can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Let me introduce my guest. Mike Cohen heads up Google's research in speech technology. He's based at the Googleplex in Mountain View, California. He joins us from a studio there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Cohen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Sheila Bloomstein is a professor of cognitive, linguistic, and psychological science at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. She joins us from a campus there. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Bloomstein.
Thanks so much. Welcome to me. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much. Mike, just how does Google speech recognition technology work? How do you get this to recognize the speech so well?
Well, the most fundamental idea behind the approach that we take is that it's data-driven. And by that, what I mean is we feed our machines many, many, many examples of people speaking, many different people speaking. And based on that, we have algorithms that build a model, and it's fundamentally a statistical model. So we build a statistical model of the language. That model has information about the basic acoustics or sound units of the language, like how the ums and the ahs and the buzz and the puzz and so on in the language are produced. Mm-hmm. It has information about the words and how they're pronounced, like economics might be spoken economics or economics. And it has information about the word sequences, the phrases and sentences that tend to happen right in the language.
So you're not building rules of grammar in English. You're using basically crowdsourcing, listening to people say them, and sort of self-correcting over time. More people talk about it, the more you learn how it works.
Yeah, that's fundamentally correct. It would be probably extremely difficult, if not impossible, to try to explicitly program all this knowledge, and we don't really understand all of the minute details. Mm-hmm. So instead, we get lots and lots and lots of data, and we build these big models, statistical models of the
right
speech,
so
based on all that data.
So give me an idea. When I ask Google to find me something in Google search, what goes on? Walk us through some of the steps that goes on in the process of recognition there.
Okay. So first, the speech comes in. We figure out where speech started and ended, and we do something called feature extraction. Basically, it's something like a spectral analysis, or trying to find what are all of the frequency components, the basic features that make up the sound. Then we take that and we feed it to the model that I just described.
Right.
So it's this big statistical model of the acoustics, the words, the grammar in terms of how words are put together. And fundamentally, speech recognition is finding a best path, a best matching path through that model, and that's what the speech recognizer guesses was said.
Mm-hmm. Is there a dictionary it goes to find words that best fit the question I'm asking?
Yeah, so one of the components of that big statistical model is a lexicon, and it's a list of all of the words in the language and a specification of how they're pronounced. Mm-hmm. So, for example, economics and economics as
right
two pronunciations.
Right. Sheila Bloomstein, tell us what happens in the brain when we hear someone speaking. Is it this similar to what Google is doing in voice recognition?
Well, in many ways it is. Our idea, the notion is that acoustic waveform comes in, and again, just as Mike said, it's transformed into a frequency, temporal, amplitude domain, and that in turn maps on to another level of abstraction, individual sound segments like putuka, badaga, iau. Those in turn map on to words like cat, dog, a mental lexicon, as we would call it, and that in turn maps on to meaning. But broadly speaking, what's really important is that the system is always making probability guesses, using all the information it can at all points in time that it can.
You mean so when I'm sorry. Go ahead. Are you going to give me an example?
No, go ahead.
No, give me an example of what you mean.
Well, an example would be, for example, if I say, let's say I say see versus sue as an example. When you say sue, you round your lips. When you round your lips, that lengthens your vocal tract, which mm-hmm. lowers the frequency. So it turns out that we don't perceive individual sounds, but we use all the information to tell us that what's coming. So s followed by e versus s followed by u is very different. If you just say s and s like that, can you hear the difference in the frequency?
Yeah.
S.
Yeah.
We use that. Another example would be that when we the sounds map onto words, we know what are the possible consonants and the possible vowels that can fit. So, for example, truck. TR starts a word, but it doesn't end any word. So we know where the beginning of a word is. So all the time we're making hypotheses about what the possible word may be, and then we slowly but surely, as information comes in, we break it down into smaller pieces.
Mm-hmm. Is this how babies are learning when they learn vocabulary?
Well, we think so. I mean, one advantage the baby has is that the baby appears to be born with essentially the building blocks for the sounds of language. So infants as young as a few days old perceive all the sounds, potential sounds of all languages in the beginning. And then slowly, as they're exposed to their native language, they actually reduce their ability to map onto the language. However, they're also very much aware and are sensitive to the probabilities of what right. sounds can go with what. So again, the baby might hear truck, and in English, TR can begin a word but never ends a word. So that gives them information about where the beginning of a word might be.
Interesting.
Or milk. LK ends a word, but there's no information, or we don't use LK at the beginning of a word. So that the baby uses those kinds of probabilities in order to be able to map it onto what is the word truck, what is the word milk, and is it a word?
Mm-hmm.
How
Mike,
do I...
Yeah, Mike, yeah. Does Google use sort of the same kind of recognition?
In a certain sense, yes, but in a certain sense, no. So it's not like we explicitly... give our machine rules about where an LK might happen, but those aspects of the language are learned in a statistical sense from all of the data that we feed
mm-hmm. it. Do the algorithms sometimes disagree with each other? For example, the lower level processor says, I know I heard this sound, and the higher level processor says, but that sentence doesn't make sense if you put those together.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. In fact, one of the core principles of how we do this is all of the knowledge sources exert their influence simultaneously. So our knowledge about the acoustics or the basic sounds like the ums, ahs, and mm-hmm. buzz, our knowledge about the pronunciation of words, our knowledge about grammar in a statistical sense, what words tend to follow what other words, all gets brought to bear simultaneously. So if somebody said something, let's say the recognizer just recognized the dog, and maybe it's a little unsure, did it say the dog ran, or did the person say the dog tan? If there's a lot of acoustic ambiguity there, then the language model, the piece that says, hey, it's way more likely after the dog to have the word ran than tan, having learned right. that from lots of examples, that will influence the recognition search.
Mm-hmm. Do you folks in the computer world actually look at how the brain works and try to design a computer about that, or do these speech recognition processes just resemble each other because we've all arrived at that's the best solution independently?
Right. It's a little of each. You know, we're certainly influenced by things that we've learned from linguists and neuroscientists, but fundamentally, our goals are engineering goals. We're trying to figure out how, with modern day computers, to build the very best, most accurate, most useful systems for end users. And so fundamentally, what we're guided by is new algorithms that gradually work better and better.
Let me see if I can get a quick question in before the break. Mike Ford in North Carolina. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi there. Go ahead.
Question. As you can tell, I'm not originally from North Carolina, so I was wondering how they handle dialect.
Yeah. How do accents and dialects? Good question.
Yep.
How do you do that?
So that goes back to the fact that we learn from examples. So when we train our recognition system or feed it examples, we try to get speech from literally millions of people speaking. And it has to include, you know, people like me from Brooklyn who do, you know, park a car, and other people from other parts of the country. And so it has to cover dialects, it has to cover voice types, it has to cover, you know, obviously both genders, it has to cover all the different kinds of noise conditions and everything else, so that as long as it's represented in our training set, therefore gets into the statistics of our statistical model, we should be able to handle it.
Uh-huh. And is there anything you need to do to work out any future that we should see better voice recognition?
Well, there's a lot of active research. A lot of the research has to do with getting more data, finding ways to use more data to train these systems. And as we get more data, the question becomes, how do we make the model bigger or richer in an appropriate way so it becomes a better model of the language?
All right.
And that research is at many levels.
Thank you both for taking time to be with us. Mike Cohen heads up Google's research in speech technology at Googleplex, and Sheila Bloomstein, professor of cognitive, linguistic, and psychological science at Brown University. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today. We're going to take a short...
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're
going to
take a short break. We're going to come back and change gears. And we're going to still talk about technology, the Xbox Kinect. How does it know what you're doing? You're not holding on to any of its tools. So we'll try to dissect that one also. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.